Today's shiur is for Schus for Shalom and Bracha. Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Tzadik Vav. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Hei Amud Beis at the Mishnah, at the new Perek. Chazal established that when a man marries a woman, the halacha is that if the husband predeceases his wife, she may remain in his home, even though the owner of the home are the yarshim of the husband, not the wife. The halacha is she can remain in that home, and they have to support her. Once the almana has her ksuba paid off, then they don't have to support her anymore. The obligation to support ends. We're going to learn in our shir machloikis of the Anshei Golo and Anshei Yehuda, if the husband's yarshim are obligated to support her, or are they not obligated to support her? That means, can they choose that to pay off the ksuba, and then she will not be entitled to support? And according to that, the Simon have the control. That was the opinion of Anshei Yehuda. And the opinion of Anshei Galil is that she has the control, and she has the choice. So says the Mishnah Amonah, the Zionist Menachse Yisoyimim, Almana, who is being supported by the Yisoyimim. Of course, the Mishnah is speaking about an Almana, because even though the halacha is that if one divorced his wife, the ksuba, and he has to pay ksuba, the halacha is that she continues to be supported until that ksuba is paid out. Still, the halacha is that even though she continues to get supported until the ksuba is paid out, she doesn't have to certainly give over her earnings to the husband or to his yosimim, to his yarshim. It's only in our case where the husband passed away and she's living in her husband's home, she's being supported by the yosimim, the halacha is that they have to support her, and Masu Deh Shalahem, but whatever she earns, she gets, they has to be turned over to the Yisoyimim. Ein Chayav Mikvurosai. And another halacha the Mishnah is teaching us is that they don't have to pay for her burial. The halacha is, so Tosfos asked the question, the Remask of Ein, that not always is the husband obligated to support her. So the answer is that the Mishnah is teaching us that even in a case where the woman did not collect the ksuba, the halacha is that, for example, as we've learned so many times in our Masechta, that according to the din of the Gemara, a woman can only collect the ksuba from karka, not metatlin. So if there's a husband who only left metatlin, that in that case the woman won't get a ksuba. So the halacha still doesn't change. Then never obligated to take care of her kfura. Yoshea, Yoshik Subasa, her Yarshim are the ones that have to chayav mikvurasai. And as we just explained from the Chasam Sofer, that halacha applies even if the Yarshim are not getting ksuba. The halacha is that she gets the ksuba. There's a fundamental question that the Avim Miluim discusses. The Yarshim are getting her earnings, as we just learned in the Mishnah. Is that considered something that they continue to get from the father? It's a halacha in Yerusha, or is this a halacha, as Avnei Miluim? It's an exchange, it's a transaction. She, because she's being supported by them, they deserve in turn her earnings. And it seems that Avnei Miluim's position is that what she's collecting, she's not collecting, that what they're collecting, they're not collecting as a transaction because they're supporting her in exchange, they're getting her earnings, but rather it's part of the Yerusha that she gets from their father. So, as I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur, there was a fundamental question, a fundamental machloikis between the Anshei Golo and the Anshei Yehuda. If the Yisoyimim are obligated, that she has the right to say, I want to stay in my husband's home, and the husband and the yosayimim have no choice. If that's the choice she takes, they have to support her, or as the halacha that the yosayimim could choose to tell her, "We'll pay you your ksuba, and we don't need to support you." And ask the Gemara, Ibailahu, Hanizoyus Tanan, what is the right way of learning a Mishnah? Amana Nizoyus Tanan or Hanizoyus Tanan? And the Gemara explains right away what would make the difference with that hay. Nizoyus Tanan reflects the opinion of Anshe Golol. Nizoyus means that she has to get supported. They don't have a choice to decline supporting her. They don't have a choice to say that we won't support you. We won't support you, and we'll just pay you out the ksuba. Adoma hanizoinus tanan. The way we learn the Mishnah is hanizoinus, and what hanizoinus reflects is that if they've chosen to support her, so then the halacha is that she will have to turn over her earnings to them. But that would reflect the opinion of the Anshe Yehuda that it's the yosayimim's choice to support or not support. Ibai, because according to Anshe Yehuda, Ibai lo yavlei. If they want, they don't have to support her. They could just pay out a ksuba. Toshma, Amr Abzeira Amishmu, Metzias Amona l'atzma. The Amona who finds a Metzia doesn't have to turn over to the Yisoyman. So says the Gemara, Ibai Am Bishlam Hanizonis Tanan, that our Mishnah reflects the opinion of the Anshe Yehuda, and they don't have to support her. Shaper, so we could understand very well what Shmuel meant to teach us, that when the Yisoyimim have chosen not to support her, so that's why she's entitled to keep her, she's entitled to keep her Metzias. And the Pnei Yeshua says that if even in a case where she chose, just like they could choose not to support her, says the Pnei Yeshua, what the Gemara here is teaching us is that she could choose, like a wife can choose, as we learned earlier in Masechta with a husband, that I won't be supported and I won't have to turn over my earnings to you. Eli Amrit, if we're going to say in the Zoinus Tanan, that the Girs of our Mishnah is Nizoinus, and that means that they have to support her. It's not up to them to choose what to do. So why should they be different than the husband? Neheva, Kibal, they should be no different than the husband. Ma baal shouldn't, just like the halacha is that a husband, metzias isha labala, whatever the wife finds, she has to turn over to the husband. Hachinami, the halacha ought to be metzias isha liyarshim. Why, if they're treated like a husband must support his wife, so too, a wife must turn over her metzias to a husband. Answers the Gemara, that isn't necessarily a proof. Lailam emelach, that our Mishnah follows the opinion of the Anshe Golol and the Zoinus Tanan, and they must support her. If that's the case, why did Shmuel say that she doesn't have to turn over the Metzias to the husband, to the Yisoyimim, says the Gemara? Tamamai Amar Rabbanu Metzias Ish Labala. Why did Chazal establish that a wife has to turn over a Metzias to the husband? To protect their relationship. And Rashi explains that the Chashash Eva is that he's going to say, if she's holding on to her Metzias, I'm not satisfied that I should have to support her. And that will prevent him, or that will cause that he won't support her, which a husband, as we've learned, should support his wife. However, by the Yarshim Tavalei Eva, they don't have a choice. A husband could try to avoid paying. The assignment realized that this is an obligation that was hoisted upon them that's not negotiable. So even if she won't turn over to Metzias, they won't be able to avoid supporting her. And since they won't be able to avoid supporting her, that's why the halacha is she could hold on to the Metzias. Another pshat that I saw the Rishonim suggest in understanding this Gemara is when you have a husband and a wife, so Chazal are very concerned that their relationship should be kept the way it's a relationship between a husband and a wife should be. And therefore, if a husband is supporting the wife and the wife is not turning over the Metzias to the husband, that could cause a rift in the relationship. And Chazal we're very concerned to make sure that there should be no rifts in the relationship. But when we have a situation, explain these Rishonim, where it's Yesoimim and the Amana. So here, it's not a marital relationship that we're looking to protect. It's a relationship that is a financial relationship. And therefore, the concern of keeping the Shalom Bayis isn't there. And that's why Shmuel could say that she keeps the Metzias, even though they have to support her. Here, we're learning that there's a very big difference if we say Nizoinus or Hanizoinus, the Machloikus of Anshe Gola and Anshe Yehuda. So there's a question that comes up by Brachas. For example, when we say the Birchas HaShachar, one of the Birchas HaShachar is Malbish Arumim. And there's a question, what is the proper wording of that bracha? Is the proper bracha HaMalbish Arumim or Malbish Arumim? So there's those that suggest that the proper girsha should be HaMalbish Arumim. And there are two reasons why. One is, because what is the wording of the bracha? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam, Malbish Arumim. When you have two mems, one after the other, the last letter of the word Ha'olam is a mem. The first letter of the word Malbish is a mem. There's always a concern that the two mems will not both be properly articulated. By putting the hay in, then you're making sure that each mem will be individually properly pronounced. But I saw a new reason why maybe the word should be HaMalbish versus Malbish, because it's interesting. One of the other brachas that we say is Matirasurim. Everybody agrees that the correct wording of that bracha is Mata Asurim. And the question is, why over there is a Mata Asurim? And over here, we say, here there's a question, should we say Malbish Arumim or Ha Malbish Arumim? Because Mata Asurim, they explain, is something that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has to do. Somebody who's Asurim, who's imprisoned, in whatever definition of that means, is in a difficult situation. And therefore, Malbish. We're learning in our Gemara that when there's no hay, it's something that's mandatory to be done. So that's why we say Matir Asurim. But when it's something which is not so mandatory, Malbish Arumim doesn't mean that you always have to get new clothing. And since it doesn't always mean that you have to get new clothing, that's why by Malbish Arumim, the correct girsa could perhaps be HaMalbish, even though by Mata Asurim, the correct girsa is always Mata Asurim, not HaMata Asurim. The only issue with this explanation is there's another place where we have this kind of a situation, and that is by the Bracha of Moitzi. And by the Bracha of Moitzi, we say HaMoitzi Lechem and Aretz. And the reason, presumably, is because we don't want to have a mem and a mem back to back. So if we're saying that whenever it's something that must happen, it says moitzi and not hamoitzi, so of course the world needs food. So it should say moitzi, not hamoitzi. And therefore, the Paiskim will suggest whatever nusach one has for any of the brachas, that's the nusach that should be followed under all circumstances. Says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina, Kamalach Shaisha Ois Labala, whatever a wife has to do on behalf of a husband, the various activities that we learned back on Daf Nun Tes, that a wife has to do on behalf of a husband, Amana Ois LaYarshim, the Amana does for the Yarshim, Chutzmi Mezigas HaKois, except for pouring the wine when to make it something that's good to drink, Batsas Amita, making the bed, and Achotzus Pan of Yadav Raglov. All these things are considered acts of chiba. And even though a wife, a mona, has to do on behalf of the Yisoyimim, the acts of chiba do not have to be done. And I saw that some of the Rishonim discuss that how do we look at these activities? Do we look at these activities as something that's part of what we just learned in the Mishnah, that the wife has to do for her husband, and anything a wife has to do for the husband, the mana has to do for the yisoimim, and that's just included? Or is that part of the household activities, and she's going to have to do the household activities? When we speak about making the bed, the Paiskim want to differentiate that sometimes part of making the bed is considered a dvar shalchiba, but not every time, not everything that is considered a act of chiba. Only what a nida is not allowed to do for a husband when she is a nida, she is the amana doesn't do for the assignment. But anything that she would do when she's not a nida, that she, while she could do while she's a nida, she could do as far as here. The same Sharm Shana Balacha say that there may be a difference if she's doing it for the assignment who are in the kavis versus for the assignment who are zacharim. We don't want it to do an act of chiba to other men. But if the yisaimim are females, we don't have that consideration. Continues the Gemara, Amar Mishu ben Levi, Kamalach she'ever ois l'rabbi, anything that an Eved is supposed to do for his owner, Talmud ois l'rabbi, a Talmud should do for his Rebbe, Chutz metaras mindel, except for untying his shoe. Because untying the shoe will look, people will accuse that the person who's doing it might be an Eved. However, says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Loi Amaran Elba Makav Shem Akir Nasai. This halacha only applies where people don't know this Talmud, and they may come to think that he's an Eved. Abba Makav Shem Akir Nasai, in a place where they know this Talmud, and they know that he's not an Eved Kanani, less limbo. We don't have that concern. Amar Vashi, Elba Makav Shem Akir Nasai Nami, even in a place where they don't recognize him, Loi Amaran Elba Makav Tefillin, only if he's not wearing Tefillin. Ava monach tefillin, if he's wearing tefillin, less limbo, we're not concerned, because avadim don't wear tefillin. So Tosfos asked the question, the halacha is that an eved is allowed to wear tefillin. Tosfos the very maskal avil. So why is the fact that this person is wearing tefillin an indication that he's clearly not an eved? So the Chasam Sofer says a very nice pshat. He says, when is the halacha that somebody who's wearing tefillin is obviously not an Eved? That's somebody who's wearing tefillin all day. In those days, people used to wear tefillin all day. But even if an Eved Kanani is wearing tefillin, and as Tosfos points out, an Eved Kanani may wear tefillin if he so chooses, since he's not allowed to wear tefillin all day. He's only allowed to wear tefillin during specific times of the day. And since he's only wearing tefillin certain times of the day, the halacha is like as follows. If somebody is wearing tefillin all day, so then he's allowed to do other things during the time that he's wearing tefillin, because he's wearing tefillin all day. But if somebody is not wearing tefillin all day, so during those brief moments that he's wearing tefillin, he's not allowed to do anything else. And that's pshat, says the Chasam Sofer, in our Gemara. Somebody who's wearing tefillin just for a brief moment won't be tying and untying shoes, because you're not allowed to do anything if you only wear tefillin for a brief moment. And this actually has very interesting ramifications. The question is, we who do not wear tefillin all day, are we allowed to wear We who do not wear tefillin all day, are we allowed to do other activities while we're wearing tefillin? If we'll say that, like the Chasam Sofer, only a person is wearing tefillin all day, so we could be more lenient that he's allowed to do other things because he's wearing the tefillin all the time. But if we're not wearing tefillin all the time, then we should limit ourselves that while we're wearing tefillin, we should only be davening or learning. It's interesting to point out, however, that Chasam Sofer did not wear tefillin, obviously, all the time, but he would wear tefillin after davening and learn while he was wearing the tefillin. And the halacha is, and he used to drink a coffee while he was wearing the tefillin and learning. The Mishnah Berurah actually is in Ayre Chaim Simen Mem, Sifkotin Yotes, not that comfortable with somebody doing so. And in fact, Dorach HaShulchan in Aruch Chaim Simon Mem Sif Cotton Hay, paskins clearly that we who do not wear tefillin all day should not be eating or drinking while we're wearing tefillin. The Shaul Shetshubas Rivas Ephraim discusses if somebody is allowed to smoke while he's wearing tefillin. So the truth is somebody shouldn't smoke anyway under any circumstances, but certainly while one is wearing tefillin, it was seen there's even a question if you're allowed to eat or drink a coffee. Certainly the Rivas Ephraim says one should not be smoking while he's wearing tefillin. Amrav Chieber Abba Amrav Yochanan Kala Meneya Talmida Mila Shamshai. Anyone who holds back a Talmud from being able to properly serve their Rebbe, he's holding back from him from being able to do a chesed. He's holding back from him the ability, the opportunity to doing what's right. Shenema lamas mireu chesed. Somebody who prevents his friend, go away from me. I don't want you to take help me. Is doing taking away from him chesed. He causes that Talmud not to have Yerushmaim. Shenema, the pasuk continues there saying, a person who prevents a Talmud from being able to properly serve his Rebbe, the will not be able to achieve Yerushmaim. The Mashah explains that why is it so important for somebody to serve one's Rebbe? Because if you are serving your Rebbe, you're going to have the opportunity to observe the way your Rebbe behaves. And from observing the way your Rebbe behaves, you can learn much practical halacha. So study alone without observing the Rebbe's behavior, the halacha is not considered really achieving the opportunity to being one's Talmud. In fact, the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Akiva once found a mace mitzvah and carried that mace mitzvah 4 mil to bury the mace mitzvah in a cemetery. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shua criticized him for doing so because the halacha is that one is required to bury a mace mitzvah in the place that it is discovered. And Rabbi Akiva said the reason he made this mistake is because he did not sufficiently serve Talmid Chachamim. Had he served Talmid Chachamim more, he would have observed what they do, and he would never made such a mistake. And in fact, the Gemara Masechta the Brachos, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, says that some Talmid Chachamim who did not have Shimush Talmid Chachamim is actually considered an Amah Arutz. Rabbi Aaron Kotel Zatzal, in his Sefer Mishnas, Rabbi Aaron says that serving Talmid Chachamim has a double benefit. Number one, as we just have been explaining, it helps the person learn practical halacha, how to behave in different situations. Another thing that happens, and the Maral makes this point as well, that by serving a Talmud Chacham, you become connected to Talmud Chacham. And the more you become connected to a Talmud Chacham, your commitment to Limud HaTorah and the key mitzvahs get strengthened. The Aflah explains that the Torah says, Ubay Sitbak, that one has to connect himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But of course, the Gemara says, it's impossible for one to connect themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Haloi Eish Achlehu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a fire. The only thing is, by connecting oneself to Talmidei Chachamim, the Aloch is it's as if one connects himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, explains the flaw, it's important, which he says is what our Gemara is teaching us, it's important for a Talmud Chacham to not push away anybody who wants to serve him. On the contrary, Talmidim who want to connect to the Rebbe is something that should be encouraged. Says the Gemara, Amar Beloza, Amana Shatofsa Metatlin. If Amana sees Metatlin from the assets that the father, that the husband had left over, that the Yarshim had taken hold of, because she wanted to get hold of those metatlin to be able to be supported, even though, as we mentioned earlier in our shir, the obligation of support is only from the karka that the father left over, the halacha is masha tafsa, that the tfisa helps. There's a very big discussion in the Rishonim. We had this discussion earlier in our Masechta. When we speak about Tfisa, where would the Tfisa be health? Where would it work? Would it be only if it was in a place that wasn't the Rishus of the Yarshim? Or would the Tfisa help only in a place which is not properly owned by the Yarshim? The Rama clearly says that the Rama seems that the opinion is that it would only be valid if it wasn't done from the Rishus of the Yarshim. But the Rama does quote an opinion of the Rivash that Al Gemar is saying that Tfisa of the Almana helps. It helps under all circumstances. Masha Tafsa Tafsa. It says the Gemara Tanya Name Hochi. Amana Shatafsa Matatam Zanasa. Masha Tafsa Tafsa. The Ken Kyosra of Dimi Amma. Mas Bakalosa Shurab Shapsai. Shatafsa Daskia Malay Mos. She seized a bag full of money. Vlaikoyak Biahad Chachamim. Lights Miyada. Chazal could not take it away from her. They let her keep it. However, continues the Gemara. Amar Ravina Vlaya Marin. Alala Mazoina. When will this Tfisa be valid? If she grabbed it for support that the Yosayimim, as we've been learning our entire shir, are obligated to support her. Aval l'ksuba, if she grabs these metatlin in payment for a ksuba, then the halacha is mafkinim ino, we don't let her hold on to it. Why is there a difference between mezoinus and ksuba? So one explanation that Tosfos, the Rav Maskil Amona, gives is that for ksuba payment, as we've been learning so often in our Masechta, a woman could collect the ksuba payment from the chasam mishubadim. But a woman cannot get her mezoinus payment from the chasam mishubadim. So since the woman always has recourse to the chasam mishubadim, that's why tfisa wouldn't help. Another pshat is that mezoinus, something that she gets even when the husband's alive. So that's why for mezoinus, Chazal were more lenient to let her do whatever she needs to do to get what she's owed. Whereas for ksuba, since she's only entitled to collect the ksuba after the husband dies or after the husband divorces her, so her rights to ksuba are not as strong as her rights to mezoinus. And therefore, for the ksuba payment, tfisa would not be valid. Maskla ma'baravashi mashnal ksuba the mitkarkavle mitatli. But we've been learning that ksuba payment only is given from the Gemara's halacha, only from karka, not from mitatli. So shouldn't that halacha apply to mezoinus nami, that she should only be entitled to get mezoinus from a karka mitatli? Ella, the mezoinus might have tafsa tafsi. That's why he thinks that just like the mezoinus, if she did tfisa, it will help. Hakinam ksuba, his opinion is tfisa will be help. Amalei, Rav Yitzchak by Naftali, Lervina, Hachamin, Mishmeid, Rabba, Kavasech. There is a difference to be made between Mezoinus and Ksuba, and he says that your Rebbe taught us that only for Mezoinus is Tfisa work, but not for Metatlin. So, Agamar begins to discuss the question where Amona did not exercise her right to collect Mezoinus, and now, a number of years later, she wants to collect that money. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yochanan Shmeid Rav Yosef ben Zimra, Amana Shashasa Shtayim V'Shalosh Shanim, a woman who waited for a number of years. And there's interesting, Machloikus HaPoiskim, how do we count these years? Do we count them as calendar years, or do we count them as months? If a woman waited a number, 2-3 years, for Leitavik Subasa, Leitavik Mezoinus, so she never asked for Mezoinus, and now she wants to collect, if the mezoinus, it's too late. And Ritva says the same halacha would apply for tzarchei refuah. If she didn't collect doctor bills, and now she wants to collect doctor bills, it's too late. So ask the Gemara, but let's go back to the wording of what we just discussed. Ask the Gemara, hashta shtayim ivda, if after 2 years she loses the right to make this claim, sholosh mebayer, so of course after 3 years she's going to lose the right. What does the Gemara mean? Answers Gemara like Kasha. Kambaniya, a woman who's poor, so she needs the money desperately. And if she didn't ask them for that money for 2 years, it's a proof that she forgave the assignment, this obligation. And a Shira, wealthy woman, is not that desperate for the money. So she waited 3 years because she wasn't so desperate for the money, and that's why she gets 3 years. Inami kamba prutzah. You have people who are not embarrassed to go to Beis Din and make the claim. So such a woman should, if she waited 2 years, it's a proof that she was meichel. Kan b'tznua, who's reluctant to go to Beis Din, so she gets 3 years. So the nafkamina between the terutzim of the Gemara is what's going to be the halacha by a wealthy woman, but she's a prutza. According to the second teretz, the prutza is the main fact. According to the first teretz, a shir is the main factor, or a niya tznua. According to the first teretz, she's an aniya, she only gets 2 years. But the second teretz says she's a tznua, she gets 3 years. Amar Rava, Layamaran, this that we said, that after 2-3 years, she gives up her rights, that's only lemafreya, what she lost that retroactively. But this that she's entitled to mezoinus moving forward, that certainly she has a right to claim. Avla habo, yeshla. By Rabbi Yochanan, Yisaimish amru, nesananu. If the Yisaimim claimed that we paid up the mezoinus for the whole year up front, v'yaymeres, but she claims, loinatatli. I didn't get them. Amila Haviraya. Who has the burden of proof? And the Gemara says, how do we analyze this question? Do we say, Nichsi Becheskes Yasmikayim? The estate of the husband really is in the authority of the Yisoyimim. And the Amana is coming to collect from that. And we have a Raya, we have a rule all throughout Shas. Hamaitz Mechavera Olav Haraya. And therefore, if the Amon is trying to collect from that money, she's the one that's going to have to bring a raya that she didn't get paid. Or does the halacha teach us, Ayadimah, Nechse Becheskes Amon Kaimi. All of the husband's assets are obligated to pay homozymous. And therefore, those assets are considered, as far as the halacha is concerned, in her control. And if the Yisoyimim want to claim that they've already paid and that they don't have to pay again, it's their obligation. Al Yisoyim al Havi Raya. Tashma. So Gemara brings a Raya. The Tani Leva. Amona. An Amona that has a right to be supported from her husband's estate. And she's coming to the Yisoyim claiming support. And the Yisoyim say, we already supported you. Kovman Shalai Nisus. The Halach is, as long as she has not gotten remarried to someone else, the halacha is al yisoyim lavi raya. The burden of proof is on the yisoyim. Nisus, once she got married and she's coming to collect back pay, it's within the 2-3 years, obviously, a mezoinus that she claims she should have received and she didn't receive, then the halacha is alel lavi raya. Because once she gets married, she loses control over her previous husband's assets. So we see from here that as long as she's not married, she's considered in control of the husband's assets. And if the Yisoyimim don't want to pay, Aleihem Lavi Raya, they have to prove it. Amar Rav Simi Bar Ashi. So Simi Bar Ashi suggests that this question, when we have this dispute between the Amon and Yisoyimim, who has the burden of proof, is actually Ketanoi, a Machloikus Tanoim. Because the Braisa says, Mecher Sukseves, if the husband died and she's selling property in order to be able to collect her mezoinus, in order to be able to collect the ksuba, mecheres v'kesevis, she has to write into the document, eilu mezoinus mecharti, these assets, these properties were sold to collect mezoinus, and eilu ksuba mecharti, and these were sold to collect my ksuba. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, oibe mecheres v'kesevis tam, she doesn't have to detail. And he says, and that's better for her not to have to detail. Says the Gemara, what is the machlokes of Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Says the Gemara, my laba hakimafki. The Gemara suggests this is the machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm the bayil lefrushi. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that you have to write out all of the details. Sover is of the opinion that nichsi becheskes yasmi kaimi. All of the father's assets are considered in the control of the assignment. And the amana, who's selling off those assets, has to bring a raya. And therefore, she has to detail what she wrote. Because if she's going to say to them that what if they're going to say to her, what you sold for the ksuba, and pay me the mezainis, they're going to tell her, well, prove that we didn't give you mezainis. But once she details in the document what she sold for what reason, that will support her contention. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, the Sava Loi by Lefrushe, is of the opinion she's in control, and only some of Iraya, and therefore they can't make any claims that they gave her the mezainis. And therefore, she's better off not detailing why she sold what she sold. Because what she's going to gain by doing so, that if the Yisraelim don't have enough assets, she'll be able to say, well, whatever I sold off for mezainis, and I could go to the nechasim u'shabadim for the ksuba. Because as we said earlier in the shiur, nechasim u'shabadim can be approached for the ksuba, but nechasim u'shabadim cannot be approached for mezainis. So if she, when she sold off the asset, already wrote that she sold it for the ksuba, so now she can't go after the nechasim u'shabadim for the ksuba because she already said that I sold assets. So if she has to prove, if the burden of proof is on her, so like Rabbi Huda says, she's going to have to detail why she sold it. As much as it's not to her benefit to do so, she's going to have to do so. Otherwise, they'll say, we gave you the mezainis already. But if Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion, suggests the Gemara at this point, that the burden of proof is on the Yisaimim. Since the burden of proof is on the Yisaimim, she's better off not detailing it. Says Mamai, it's not necessary that that's the machloikus of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Everybody will agree that she's in control, and the burden of proof is on the Yisaimim. And therefore, al Yisaimim lahaviraya. The burden of proof is on the Yisaimim. But what is the machloikus? Rabbi Yehuda, it's a type of kamashmalan. Rabbi Yehuda says the reason she should detail everything she did is because she wants to protect her reputation. If she's not going to keep detailed records of why she sold what she sold, people are going to say that she sold everything for mezainis, and they're going to say that she has a voracious appetite, that she needs that much food for mezainis. In order to protect her reputation, that's why she should be careful. And in fact, there's a wonderful word from the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim says in the Sefer Shmiras Halashon, if a person was asked, where could I find fire? And he answers, well, you could go to that house. There's always fire going, burning there. So, says the Chavetz Chaim, it depends how the answer is given. Sometimes you could give the exact same answer, and it could be a positive answer, or it could be a negative answer. Explains the Chavetz Chaim. Sometimes by saying, there's always fire burning in that house, it's a very positive answer. What you are saying is that that home is an open home. There's always hachnosos orchim in that home, and there's always fire burning. They're always cooking for all the many guests that they have there. Or it could mean these are people that are always eating. They're always partying, and that's why they're always cooking there. He gave the exact same answer, but the difference between these two answers is very significant. And the same thing here. You have to be careful how the message is sent. And that's the lesson of our Gemara. The woman is selling assets. She needs to be concerned about her reputation. If we won't explain that Rabbi Huda, who said that she should detail what she sold and why she sold it in order to protect her reputation, says the Gemara, Hada by Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan asked the question, Tifshlevi Masnisen, we could answer from our Mishnah. Because Rabbi Yochanan asked the question, and our Mishnah, according to this, will answer it. Mecheres, Lamezenesa, Shloi Bezdin. The Mishnah says that somebody, an almana, who's selling off property for a mezainis, can do so without Bezdin. She won't have to wait for the Dayanim, as we're going to learn in our coming shiurim, to have to get around to selling her asset. The service, and she writes, Elul Mezainis Mecharti, she has to write why she sold it. So we see from our Mishnah isn't that a proof that the nechas becheskes yisaimim? So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan use that Mishnah that requires the woman to detail why she sold something as a proof that the yisaimim are in control? Ella, why did Rabbi Yochanan not bring a raya from that Mishnah? Mimasnis and lekla mishmenei, you can't bring a raya from the Mishnah, because we'll explain that the Mishnah is only etz taiva kamashmon, that it's appropriate for the woman to write down why she sold what she sold to protect her reputation. Achnami etz taiva kamashmon. Inami, or the Gemara goes with a different way of explaining this. The kulam nechus becheskes yasmi kaimi. Everybody will agree that it's the yisaimim who are in control of the assets. So if that's the case, why did Rabbi Yossi say that she doesn't have to write detail what she sold and why? Because Rabbi Yossi is going to hold k'rabai k'shisha. Domabai k'shisha. Moshe Rabbi Yossi, who says to write less is better. Mea dava dama b'shchimira. A shchimira shama tnu m'saim zuz l'plani bal chayvi. We know Divrei Shchimra k'ksuvim damri. And Shchimra wrote that I want to give 200 zuz to this person who I owe money to. So now the question is, how do we view this statement of the Shchimra? Does it mean that he wanted to pay back the amount that he owes? Or he meant to give him a gift, separate and apart from the money that he owes? So the halach is, rotza, this person could say that it was given to me to pay off the debt. Rotsa matana notland. Or he could say that it was given to me as a gift because it was left ambiguous. Here too, leaving things ambiguous sometimes is better. Im bimatana notland, and if he gives it as matana, lekach yofa kaichai, isn't he better off because he'd still be able to collect the money that's owed to him? Similarly, but almana, that it's better for her, says Rabbi Yossi, even though her reputation may be put into question, it's better that she should not write. Because if she's going to write that she sold it for the ksuba, she won't be able to collect from lekuchas for mezainis. But when she doesn't detail what she sold it for, she'll say that she sold those assets for the mezainis, and then she'll be able to go after the lekuchas if the yisaimim don't have enough assets to collect the ksuba. So Rabbi Yossi is saying that even though there may be an advantage, as Rabbi Yehuda said, for her reputation to write what she sold it for, she wants to be able to collect both the mezainis and the ksuba. And the way it should be easier to be able to do so is by writing less on these sale documents.